The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Live from Northern California, it's Lifeline with Craig Roberts. He's the host of Northern California's longest-running conservative talk show. He's a man with a message, a conservative with compassion. He's Lifeline's own Craig Roberts.
Yeah, and you left out, he slices, he dices, and so much more. It's sounding like a Ginsu knife commercial here. They do those ads anymore? Of course, late-night TV, I don't know. For me, there's no such thing, because at my age, late-night TV is like 9:30, right? All right, well, enough about the old man in the sea. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Lifeline. It is the 20th of March. Does that mean spring is tomorrow? Spring will be sprung on the 21st. Is that correct? Come on now. You got to support me on this, Miles, because if I'm wrong, I'm going to really feel embarrassed. I think tomorrow, indeed, is the first day of March, and it's kind of starting to look a little springish out there. And for those of you that are suffering from allergies, even as you hear me occasionally cough on the air, you'll know spring was yesterday. 19th? Really? I thought it was the 21st. Okay, well, if it says it on the internet, then you know it's got to be true. Okay, so yesterday was the first day of spring, and if you're a sufferer of allergies from pollen, you already knew that. All right, well, let's get down to cases. Speaking of this being spring, when spring is in the air, that generally also means that April showers bring May flowers, and April 15th also brings the tax man. That's right, and it's kind of feeling odd this year. If you're getting that sense of deja vu all over and very quickly again. You might recall that you paid your income taxes, if you live in many parts of the San Francisco Bay Area, back in November of last year. So how can we be talking tax? Well, there was a special dispensation because of the flooding that we had back in January of a year ago. So that does indeed mean we are back on the cycle again. And if you have questions related to income taxes in a broad sense, I've got some good news for you. Aside from the guy that you pay to prepare your taxes, you'll get no tax preparer to answer questions 26 days out from tax day. But my special guest tonight, Pastor Jerry Gerardo, will certainly do just that. He is a CPA. He has an MBA, and that doesn't mean that he played basketball. And he is the owner of Gerardo CPA, and also, coincidentally, happens to be executive pastor and chairman of the board at Lighthouse Christian Church. And Pastor Gerardo, great to have you back on the program.
Greg, thank you so much. Honored to be with you again and all the wonderful listeners.
Wow, we must have really pulled some strings or made some promises or something, because I tell you, I can't get my CPA to even answer an email, especially as we are here so close to April the 15th. So we're very delighted that you've been so kind and gracious to spend some time with our listeners tonight. And I want to begin with some basics that are perhaps most important or of great interest to listeners, and that is, you know, we look at the notion of tax season, and I mentioned earlier about the fact that we technically just paid our income taxes if we all stuck with the 15th of November deadline. And so some people say, wow, do we have to really do this again? What does Scripture have to say about the issue of paying taxes as it relates to the broader picture of financial stewardship?
Yeah, great question. No, and again, it's really special to be with you. It is a super busy time of the season for us, but honored to help out and provide some guidance from Scripture first. But, you know, Christ himself sets an example for us. We find this in Matthew 17, when those that were coming to collect the temple tax came to Christ, and he said, well, let me see the coin, and He reads it and it says, what does it say? And give to Caesar what is Caesar's. Render under Caesar what is Caesar's. And then he goes and actually has a coin that's taken from the mouth of a fish and pays for the temple tax for him and one of the disciples. And so he demonstrated by his example that he was going to comply with the tax that was imposed, whether he thought it was a good idea or not. And we find elsewhere in Scripture, Paul gives us some guidance in Romans chapter 13 about submitting to the authorities. It's really difficult and challenging to do that when you don't agree often, perhaps, with what the authorities are doing. But we have good instruction from Scripture that we are not to create an offense, and we are supposed to be submitting when we can do so in good conscience and comply with the laws, because it'll go easier for us and it's the appropriate thing to do. I know many were probably hoping I'd find something else in Scripture that was the broad exemption, where none of us who are followers of Christ have to pay any income taxes. Unfortunately, that's not what we find.
Yeah, so much for that loophole we were waiting for. I was expecting some passage of Scripture like you're a citizen in the world but not of the world, or something of that sort.
Right. Well, absolutely. And Jesus talks about that a lot as well. Even in that context, he says, you know, it's not the family of the king that's paying the taxes. And even though you're citizens of my kingdom, we're still going to comply with the laws in this world, you know, unless it comes to a point where we truly in good conscience can't do that. And I know that there are many of us who struggle with all kinds of expenditures that our government has, but the guidance is still there. And I do know from talking with others, some that have taken a really extreme approach and have dug their heels in and have tried not to pay taxes, kind of tax protesters, it has not gone well for them. They've invited all kinds of problems instead of simply complying and doing everything they can to pay the least amount of tax legally required.
And that's just the key there. In fact, I understand that there's in your profession a special term. I was just looking this up on the internet, a special term for people that just decide, you know what, I don't like where the money is going, I'm not going to pay my taxes. And the special term that the government has set aside for those folks is easy. It's called inmate.
So yeah, right.
If you don't want to wear that moniker, then maybe some good advice, and that is to comply with the obligations. And if you don't like the way your government spends the money that they collect from you in taxes, I got a good piece of advice. Change your government. You get a chance to do that this November.
There you go. There you go.
Now, that said, I do want to talk about a fundamental difference, which is a good way to sort of set off the tone of our conversation this afternoon, Pastor, and that is a couple of issues related directly to tax paying. We all understand that tax evasion, and what I alluded to a moment ago, is illegal and will likely get you in trouble with the IRS, Franchise Tax Board, et al. But there's another type of managing taxes that, in fact, is not only fully legal, but for the wise steward is very important, and that is tax avoidance. So help our listeners understand the difference between tax evasion versus tax avoidance, and what tax avoidance means from the standpoint of not just paying your taxes, but actually doing tax planning.
Right. Great question, and a huge focus. In fact, it's the whole premise of the industry and businesses like ours to help taxpayers, our clients, become compliant and follow the rules and the regulations, but to do so in a way where they are taking advantage of the laws that are on the books or that are held by courts when there's cases that are adjudicated in favor of a taxpayer, in favor of the IRS. There's guidance out there that can help us to understand how to navigate through to organize your affairs to pay the least amount of tax, taking advantage of all kinds of opportunities that we'll talk about as this program ensues. But that is different from saying, I've earned all this income, I'm just not going to file the return, or I'm just going to operate a cash business, nobody's going to know. That literally is illegal. under tax legislation, and there are criminal proceedings that can ensue with someone that takes that kind of approach and evades taxes. And there's some high-profile cases of celebrities, even movie stars and people in the music industry who have done just that and have ended up in prison. So it's something that, again, we would never encourage or participate in. But oh my goodness, there are areas of the tax law, Craig, that are black and white. You have to report this, you can deduct that. There are other areas of the tax law where it's more of a gray. It's also estimating and coming up with positions that are not perhaps directly addressed in the legislation, in the regulations, and there's good reason to file on a certain basis. And as long as there's a reasonable basis for doing so, it's not illegal to do that. So we have to be careful when we're working in the area that would be considered more of a gray area in terms of claiming deductions or even certain credits. But there is a way of first for us as believers in Christ to honor Christ in all things and also to comply while minimizing our taxes legitimately.
Now, the last I counted, or somebody counted for me, more accurately put, there were upwards of 6,800 and something pages of the current U.S. tax code. And I look at a number like that, Pastor, and I think, wow, that's pretty overwhelming. I mean, there's an awful lot that you need to understand. Now, clearly, there are aspects of it that only apply to corporations, LLCs, nonprofits, and then you get into S Corp and all those, you know, various different subcategories of for most of us, is just simply an old-fashioned 1040. But I have to wonder, when you look at the layers of complexity and the fact that tax code is not static either. I mean, there are certain provisions that sunset. In fact, I think some of the tax benefits that were passed during the Trump administration, if they are not renewed by this Congress, are set to sunset. And so, that being the case, I want to ask a tough question. And I know some are going to think, you worked this out with him in advance because this seems to be a setup. But, you know, there's the old adage, you know, he who has himself as a client, as an attorney, has a fool for a client. And I imagine that the same sort of advice along the lines of, you know, what surgeon wants to perform surgery on themselves, answer not the smart ones. Is it reaching a point where layers of complexity, other than just taking the standard deductions and there's not a lot going on, you're not running a business, things of that sort, that maybe using some of these online services will work? But I have to wonder, at what point does it become advisable for somebody to say, you know, I could be leaving a lot of money on the table that I don't understand because this is just so involved and so complex? When is it advisable to seek out the services of a professional like yourself?
Yeah, great question. Again, there are a lot of tools out there. There's software, and they'll guide you through TurboTax and others that are actually good software packages that can help walk you through basic tax return preparation, even some complex tax return preparation. But the key is not just with the software, it happens to be with what your knowledge is and how you input that information. So for many, it's very, you know, it's good advice to seek out some professional help. And there are different firms out there for different types of taxpayers. There's some very straightforward returns. People can get help in different ways, and the cost can be very reasonable for straightforward returns. But I would still be looking for that kind of help. For taxpayers that have their own businesses, that have complexity to their tax picture with investments and real property and investments in LLCs and partnerships, oh my goodness, as you were intimating before, it's just gotten so complex, even with basic returns with wage earners and investment income and education credits. You said it very well. You might end up saving a little bit by not hiring a tax professional, and you end up losing a lot more than that by missed deductions, missed credits, miscalculations, or things that the IRS is not going to help you to figure out. because when you submit a return, they're going to process that return and match it up to the documentation that they've received directly, W-2s, 1099s with interest and dividends, every 1098s for mortgage interest. There's a lot that the IRS and the state of California and other states get a hold of that they can match up to your tax return. If those things don't match up, then you're going to get a tax notice or maybe even an IRS or a state examination if things are off in a material way. So the good advice is the advice that you stated. It does sound self-serving, but it is to get professional help, and it pays off time and time again.
Yeah, it really is, as you suggest, sort of that double-edged sword that you either make the mistake by leaving money on the table because you didn't realize you qualified for certain deductions or certain classes of deductions you didn't realize existed, or you decide, oh, I'm claiming it all as a deduction, and the IRS says, yeah, we'd like to have a conversation with you, and all of a sudden you're finding yourself paying penalties on top of it. If you've just joined us, believe it or not, we have a CPA here on the radio 26 days before tax day. Now, we can't dive into anything that's really complicated, and you probably don't want to be on the radio giving a lot of specificity about your own situation. But if you're one of many saying, you know, I've got a question and I'm not sure what the answer is, can I at least get a little general push in the right direction? Why don't you pick up the phone and give us a call? Toll free at 888-367-5329, 888-367-5329. That's 888-FORKFAX. With us today is the executive pastor of Lighthouse Christian Church. He also happens to be a CPA and has an MBA. He is Pastor Jerry Girardo. And we are talking all things income taxes on today's program, 26 days before the tax filing deadline of April the 15th. So if you've got some broad related tax questions, what about this? What about that? Again, we can't go too far into the weeds here, but we'll certainly try to get some answers for you as Pastor Girardo is here to put his expertise to use for you. If you just want to keep eavesdropping, oh, believe me, I got a big question here. Let's see. Question 25, is kitty litter considered a deduction if I call the cat my dependent? Well, not sure about that. Well, we'll find out when we come back. Our conversation, Pastor Jerry Girardo with us today, answering all of your tax questions. Pick up the phone. Join us right now. 888-367-5329. 888-367-5329. That's 888-FORKFAX.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Pastor CPA Jerry Girardo with us today. We are talking about all things tax related as we are barreling toward the April 15th deadline. And so let's just dive right in, shall we? One of the big questions, of course, is in relationship to the matter of deductions. In the old days, we used to count every receipt and get them all in a big pile and hope that we came up with a big number. There are, of course, now sort of those minimum numbers that if you're going to be significantly below it, probably not worth all the effort. How do you go about determining what the trigger point is, Pastor Girardo, in terms of when to deduct and when not to?
Yeah, so when we look at opportunity to claim the standard deduction that's available to every taxpayer based on their filing status, it's a statutory amount. It's updated each year. Typically, there's an inflationary increase. You compare the standard deduction that's provided automatically with your itemized deductions, which you would report on Schedule A of your personal tax return. And those itemized deductions are medical expenses, but only if they exceed 7.5% of your gross income. So you need to know what your gross income is. And if you have significant medical for the year, you might really be able to claim a deduction. So you have to assess that and determine whether it's worthwhile for you to pull your medical receipts together. If you know it's going to fall way short, you don't even go and hassle with that. But there's also mortgage interest deductions, but there's some limitations on mortgage interest deductions, complexity there. You can only deduct interest on a principal residence or a second residence up to the first $750,000 of debt on the property. If you have more debt than that, then you're going to be limited with your mortgage interest deduction. But for many taxpayers who are homeowners, that's a great tax deduction that plays into Schedule A. There's also charitable contributions, cash that go to different charities and church and tithing. And those are legitimate charitable contributions if they're to a 501c3 organization, a duly constituted, you know, nonprofit organization or church, or non-cash charitable, Goodwill, Salvation Army, things that you give that aren't cash or check or payment via credit card, but actual items. And you capture those and you can estimate how much the value is and claim that as a deduction as a non-cash charitable. And then there's one other category, and that has to do with your taxes, from real property tax payments, as well as state income tax, as well as the deductible portion of DMV fees, all come in a section of taxes paid. And the overall limitation on that category is $10,000. So even if your property taxes exceed that, you can only claim 10. If your property taxes and your state income tax that you pay exceeds that together, you only claim the 10. So you've got to look at each of these categories, Craig, and see where you fall to know, is it likely you're going to exceed with your total itemized deductions the standard deduction? I know that sounds really complex. It's not if you break it down and you get used to the rules, but it is important to calculate it correctly and claim the appropriate deduction. And remember, you get the greater of the two, either your standard deduction that's right there in the tax law for your filing status. If you're single or if you're married, filing joint or head of household, there's different standard deduction amounts. And you compare that with your itemized deductions and you want to claim the greater of the two.
I'm curious from your perspective, and undoubtedly down through the years, you have prepared thousands of tax returns. There's obviously many examples where individuals filing a simple 1040, they don't really have a lot of control over their spending. And by that, I mean they don't have investment property. They're not running a business. They're not filing a Schedule C. And so as a result, it says, well, you know, we bring in what I bring in and we spend what we spend for rent or food or property taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's not a lot I can control. But speak, if you would, to the individual that maybe has the ability to engage in some strategizing in terms of deductions, depreciation, repairs on a rental property, things of this sort, and just how much the ability is afforded them to do some tax planning or tax strategy. So as opposed to the idea of, okay, it's January 1st, the old year is over with, I total up everything that I earned, everything that I spent, and I determine exactly what my tax liability is, as opposed to strategically saying, you know, I can save some money on my taxes next year by doing this year. How much of that as a tool is really available to folks?
Oh my goodness. There's a lot of tools. It's a great question. In fact, a lot of our practice, our Gerardo CPA, my brother Steve is a co-founder with me 30 plus years ago. We've got a large local-based practice, 40 team members working hard, serving clients with different types of tax filings, different types of businesses, individuals, those with investments, those without. So there's a lot of opportunities that we come across, and we want our clients to be prepared and forward-thinking. We want them to be proactive. And so we help them with that, with these very things that you're talking about, which are the proactive, prospective tax planning. After the year is over, Craig, there's only so much you can do other than just doing a great job to make sure you're not missing out on certain deductions that you're entitled, that you incurred last year. But moving forward, you can actually orient your investments through the marketplace and know the difference in how dividends and qualified dividends are treated under tax law, long-term capital gains on investments in the market, or just assets that you're holding and selling later on, you hold that over a year, your long-term capital gain rate is a beneficial gain, a rate that's less than what your normal statutory marginal rate is. So there's planning that revolves around investing now and into the future. You can invest in tax-exempt securities. We have a number of clients this year that sold businesses or sold assets and just parked investments with U.S. Treasuries because the interest rates are up and it's non-taxable for the state of California, the interest income. It's taxable for Fed, but they could get a good rate of return without tremendous risk and not have to worry that they're missing out, but it's non-taxable for California, so they're getting some tax savings simply by investing in U.S. Treasuries. I'm not an investment advisor. That's not our expertise, so I'm not going to give investment advice. I'm just going to tell you how things work from a tax standpoint. So there's investing in the marketplace, and stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and all types of different investments. And there's benefits to that and beneficial tax rate strategies. There's timing of transactions like tax loss harvesting. If somebody's got significant gains in their portfolio during the year, at year end, we always sit down with our clients and their investment advisors, many of them, to say, what can we do now and advise you? It has to be an investment decision. So that's not for us to make, but we can tell you, if you were to liquidate these investments and trigger these losses, it's going to save you tax dollars today. So we do a lot of year-end tax planning with clients when it comes to October, November, or even earlier in the year if they've got major transactions. But that's just one big area of investments. There's also, as you intimated, people have real property investments, rental properties, commercial, residential, maybe just a single family. Some people have gone into business literally with the VRBO market, Airbnb market. They're owning and they're deriving tax benefits. They capture their rental income, but then they're entitled to deduct their expenses that relate to that property. And there's great deductions. And one of the deductions is called depreciation, which isn't something that you're paying each year. It's based on your purchase price for the property itself and a portion of it that's considered depreciable under the tax law. And those depreciation deductions, which are supposed to be a gauge of the wear and tear on the property, are automatically calculated and deducted if it's input correctly into your return to take depreciation that helps to offset rental income. And there's accelerated depreciation for certain types of improvements to property or equipment that you're buying even in your business. So depreciation and taking maximum write-offs for depreciation, there's Section 179 of the Internal Revenue Code that applies to a lot of our clients where they buy an asset. If it qualifies, they can write off 100% of it in year one instead of depreciating it over many years in accordance with the old and the normal depreciation rules. So we give advice that relates to businesses, to owners of rental properties for sure. But there's other opportunities, too, in making improvements to your own property.
Well, and certainly what you mentioned a moment ago, just in relationship to, you know, the strategy that needs to be in place, that, you know, whether you use a sort of a standardized depreciation schedule or you want to front load all of that is really going to bend, I think, among your abilities to sort of predict in the future what income levels are going to be like. Is that true?
It is true. Oftentimes, a dollar saved today is going to be more beneficial than a dollar saved tomorrow. So oftentimes, not always, and there's the thoughtfulness has to be there. A lot of our tax planning with our clients is not just looking at today or this year. It is looking out. Where are you going to be and what are the expectations for your income and taxable position? But assuming that things are pretty copacetic and standardized, and you're going to be in a similar tax bracket potentially, you're going to want to save taxes today, but play off of your marginal tax rates. So that's where the planning comes in. What's the opportunity? Well, do you need something for your business? If you don't need it, don't buy it. If you need it, why not get it this year and write it off under Section 179, or there's an alternative category of bonus depreciation, which also provides major write-offs in year one. Reduce your taxes significantly today, and then continue to plan into the future.
Pastor Jerry Gerardo with us today. We are talking about tax planning. And, of course, with tax season just 26 days away, some solid advice, important things to be thinking about. We're going to get back to more of our conversation. If you want to jump in with a question, again, you're welcome to just eavesdrop. I got a whole list here. Otherwise, if you want to hop in with a question, you're welcome to do so with 888-367-5329, 888-FORKFA. AX. Back to our conversation with CPA and Pastor Jerry Gerardo as this edition of Lifeline continues.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
All right, we're talking all things taxes on today's edition of Lifeline. With us is the senior pastor, chairman of the board of Lighthouse Christian Church, and coincidentally also a tent maker, though he doesn't make tents per se, but he helps people who do make tents pay their taxes. He is a CPA in private practice. With us today, Pastor Jerry Gerardo. You know, I want to circle back, Pastor, to something you were mentioning just prior to the break, the notion of what's involved when it comes to one's investments. And I think for a lot of folks, there's kind of a set it and forget it mentality, meaning that they got a job, they set up their 401k at work, they decided how much they would have swept out of their account in contributions every month. They kind of see it as there but not there, money they can't touch till they retire. They don't pay any income taxes on it, so they're not really worried about it. But then aside from that, there are other types of investments that might be sitting in an account outside of a traditional IRA or 401k plan where some engagement is necessary. You know, when I think about the average investment or financial advisor person, well, you know, if they're doing a good job for you, they're focusing on small commissions, low fees, high returns. But those high returns at the wrong time in the wrong categories can trigger some pretty ugly tax consequences. So is part of what you're suggesting here, and I would have likened it to, you're a surgeon and you're an anesthesiologist. You'd like to have the two of them connected at the hip when you're undergoing surgery because the consequences could be fatal otherwise. Is the same thing true from a tax liability position when it comes to relationship between your financial advisor and your tax planner?
Absolutely. No, I think it's an apt analogy. It's each has their expertise, but it's the coordination that can make a real big difference, because the rate of return and how you invest, that's the investment advisor's expertise and responsibility. But we all know that what your real wealth is that you're generating or income has to do with how much tax you're paying on that wealth or that income. And that's where we come in and can provide advice. Again, not to sell this or that, but to let you know if you were to reposition this way, it would save you a chunk of taxes in a given year. So we'll have clients that maybe are selling a residence, for example, and we'll consult with them on, okay, there's residence gain exclusion rules. So you can sell a residence, and if you're single, you can exclude up to $250,000 of gain, and you don't have to pay tax on that. If you have more gain than that in the sale of the property, you might end up paying some tax. That gain exclusion is up to $500,000 for a married couple filing jointly if they satisfy the ownership and the use rules. But let's say they sell that property, and they are relocating and they're going to a less expensive area and downsizing, which is happening a lot. They have other funds to now invest, so they can take advantage of gain exclusion on the sale of the residence. They can also invest, hopefully with expertise, and look at tax advantage type of investing as well. So it depends on their time horizon for their investments, where their needs are, but the taxes and the tax bite makes a difference. So that's where we get involved and can lend some expertise to let specific clients know, wow, given what's going on here, here's an opportunity to manage your tax affairs differently. Now, it's your investment advisor that's got to give you that direction on your investments if you're trusting in them, but we're not going to give you the advice. We're getting to what to invest in. We're just going to help you with the tax consequences and the tax savings that can be there if you take certain steps.
You know, and it dawns on me that there's another important profession that really ought to be for the wise steward, sort of a trifecta. And not only is it critical that there be communication between your investment advisor and your tax planner slash CPA, but I would imagine your estate planning attorney too. And I raise that question because you talk about the sale of a residence. You know, we've had some laws that have changed here in the last two, 3 years in California that in one respect is good. If you live in an area and decide upon retirement, you want to be closer to the grandkids. It used to be that you'd move and you'd lose that wonderful Prop 13 tax basis. Yep. Now you have some tax portability advantages that are available to you. But, you know, the old adage, Pastor, what the big print giveth, the little print taketh away. And that is that if you're also coincidentally thinking about giving that piece of property to a son or a daughter or a grandchild upon your passing, their ability to inherit your tax basis as well, well, that's a bit of a different scenario now. They've got a year to move into the property upon your death and claim it as their principal resident. And if they don't, guess what? That's going to be a step up in basis and going to get reappraised. And some folks might be in for a big shock. So when it comes to that aspect of tax preparation, you know, I know we tend to think, okay, what's happening in 26 days versus what's going to happen in 365. But is it also important that there be dialogue going on between your CPA and your trust attorney when you're thinking about the long-term tax implications of your estate?
Absolutely. No, I think that's very wise as well. We do a lot of coordination with estate planning, you know, and trust attorneys helping clients. We want them to be forward thinking again and taking advantage of opportunities that are there. We have our own estate planning kind of experience, but it's on the estate tax and the income tax side. We're not attorneys. So the estate attorneys, the trust attorneys have to be involved with you when you're setting up your trust, changing your trust, or creating a will if you would prefer to have a will. Most don't nowadays. They prefer to have a revocable trust or a series of trusts that come into play. But we do coordinate and do get involved with our clients in that kind of planning as well. But you brought up in another area which has to do with the property tax base. That's its own area of specialization. And there's even attorneys or specialists that are very good at looking at the laws that have come into play that allow people to transfer the tax basis from a property tax standpoint from one generation to the next. There are exemptions, there are exclusions, and boy, it's a big issue because to have the property reassessed and start paying property taxes at a much higher rate in the future on the heirs is really anathema. So being aware of those opportunities and taking good advantage of that is very important.
Yeah, because there can be a really big gotcha there if you're not you're not prepared for that little surprise.
Exactly. You can be looking in one area and not be aware that there's this other area that's very important, too. So if you've got some expertise that is covering these different areas, you're going to make better decisions and be able to react to opportunities that can help you to navigate through to, again, pay the least amount of income tax moving forward, as well as keeping your property tax base if that's at all possible. And then there's a whole separate area of estate taxes, and the estate tax exemption is very high. So a lot of folks that are passing and passing on assets to their heirs aren't being hit with an estate tax. But we do work with clients that have major estates, and that is an issue. And there's a lot of planning that goes into gifting of assets out, taking advantage of gift tax laws and gift tax reporting, in addition to estate planning. It's all tied together. So these are really important areas to be considered. And we're thankful that we have some expertise to help work with clients in these areas and refer them out. If they need a trust attorney, if they need someone who's a specialist in the property tax area, we've got contacts that can help them, because that's outside of our specific expertise.
Yeah, understood. And but, you know, again, it still goes back to the point that there's, if you're going to be a good steward, there really needs to be a degree of synergy amongst all of these professions, because while you each have your own arena of expertise and where your knowledge area lies, there's still a lot of crossover that one impacts the other, which impacts the other. And so it's almost as if certain discussions really have to be conference calls almost, don't they?
Well, some do. And that's really an efficient way to go about it. Get the advisors on the line and have that kind of conversation. If not, it's following up, and it's always the client. We're here to serve the client. The client's the quarterback of their own situation, but we can step in and say, wow, here's our best advice. Let's get a hold of the investment advisor, because there's important considerations here from a tax standpoint, but these are investment. Hey, let's get the estate planning attorney. Oh, you don't have one. Okay, we can refer several, so you can interview and get an estate and trust attorney involved so that we can then coordinate with them. Exactly right.
And taking a proactive position is really important, isn't it? I mean, after you die, to suddenly realize, oops, I left something out of my will. Well, that ship is sailed. And I suppose the same thing is true, other than maybe something like what, funding an IRA that you can do up until tax day, at least a Roth IRA. When the year closes, that's it. So if you haven't gotten it done by December 31st, and all of a sudden it's New Year's Day and you're thinking about, gosh, I should have done X, Y, Z, too late. That chapter is over.
That's correct in most cases. Yeah. For individual taxpayers, they're cash basis. So you have to incur that expense, you know, in the given year in order for it to count as a deduction in that year, even for a potential cash basis business. There are certain businesses that are accrual basis where the rules are different. And it's not just based on when you incur pay. It's when you actually are obligated on some kind of a liability or a payable that you can claim a deduction. So it depends on the type of business you're in, if we're talking about a business, but it's a really important point. The planning has to take place ahead of the year end, and the sooner the better in a given year. The things that you can do after year end, you highlighted, you can still make, if you qualify, a tax deductible IRA contribution. You can still make a Roth IRA contribution, depending on your level of income and so forth. There's things that we can look at for you. And one big one, and this goes back to those that have businesses, whether they're sole proprietors or other businesses, that they can make, if they have a retirement plan that they put in place with thoughtfulness, they can actually fund retirement contributions, like in the case of a SEP IRA, or in the case of a solo 401k plan that a single, you know, business owner consultant can put in place, they can actually fund some of that retirement contribution in the following year, not only up through April 15th, but even all the way out with an extended return to, in some cases, October 15th, and claim the deduction for the prior year. We advise our clients all the time of those opportunities because we want them to know what's available. But those are very few, and typically it's just this retirement funding that can take place after the end of the year. everything else needs to be done with the kind of planning and the proactive involvement that you're talking about.
A couple of last questions, and I want to pivot to solar, which of course has been a hot topic, not only in terms of the ever-increasing cost of electricity in a state like California, but you know, some of the advantages. Now, with the transition from NEM 2 to NEM 3, has the tax benefit of going solar, has that ship sailed, or is it still available?
No, there's still opportunities to take significant credits for solar. So, you know, it can be up to, you know, up to a 30% credit of the cost of that solar energy system, including installation, if it's put in place, you know, in 2023, 30% credit still available for 2024, and I think they've extended it further. There's an intent, we know that Congress has, and the current president, to continue to promote green policy. So that's reflected in the tax law, and people are taking advantage of that.
And that 30%, is that off the top or off the bottom?
That is a credit. So that is actually literally a dollar for dollar reduction in your tax. So let's say that somebody goes and puts in place a system for $50,000 and funds that and pays and sets it up in 2023. Well, that's a $15,000 credit that's gonna, they do their tax return federally, they calculate their tax, and they can reduce their tax by $15,000. Now, if their tax is not as much as $15,000, the solar credit can't create a refund. You can't say, okay, I had $10,000 of tax due for the year and I've got a $15,000 credit, so I'm going to get a $5,000 refund. No, your tax liability goes to zero and you get a carryover of the credit that you couldn't utilize. So there's a difference in the tax law between what are called refundable credits, in other words, credits that can also actually create a refund for you, versus non-refundable credits. Often the non-refundable credits have a carryover and you can utilize the excess amount in the subsequent year.
So it's still an advantage. Even if you can't take advantage of the entire amount, you can carry it over to the next year. Final question. Somebody listening saying, oh boy, you know what? I'm in trouble. I've got a stack of notices. I've been delinquent. I've just not really been very good at my due diligence when it comes to being a good steward. Somebody that's dealing with challenges and problems with the IRS, what's the best approach?
Yeah, again, it's to be proactive. It's easy to put the head in the sand, but you want to respond to notices timely, because the time frame's March, and then you can have opportunities that foreclose on you. But typically, if somebody's in that spot, there still are things that can be done. Number one, the assessment might not be correct in the first place, because the IRS or the state of California gets 1099s and other information, but they don't have all of your information. So depending on what's generating the notice, oftentimes we've been able to work with clients to say, wait a minute, that's incorrect on the IRS's part. They don't see the whole picture. Let's amend a return, but you have to do that within the statute of limitations to take that opportunity. But that can be done. So the first thing is to get someone who's knowledgeable to assess what's really going on here. Is it accurate, the assessment? And is there a way, even if it is accurate, to number one, get on a payment plan? That can be done. Or if there's other real serious financial issues and challenges, maybe get to a specialist and have an offer in compromise where you can actually have part of your tax liability eliminated, if not altogether, based on hardship rules. But there are things that can be done. There's also first-time penalty waivers that you can take advantage of. And in some cases, we've been successful where other things didn't work, going actually to a department of the IRS, the Treasury Department, that's called the Taxpayer Advocate's Office, to get help directly on matters that the taxpayer couldn't get satisfaction dealing just with the IRS agent, the revenue agent, whoever they were dealing with. So it doesn't fit for every circumstance, but there are things that typically can be done, but you want to be proactive and get help.
Pastor Jerry Girardo. He is again the executive pastor at Lighthouse Christian Church of Novato, but he's also a tent maker. So that means during the day he works as a CPA. Now, we might be perilously close to tax season for him to be taking on any new clients, but as you've heard the conversation today and say, you know, I like what the guy has to say, you'll like him even more so in person. Why don't you check him out online, GirardoCPA.com. That's I'm going to spell it, and I'm going to spell it right. GirardoCPA.com. And if you missed all that, give us a call here at the radio station, and we'll make you say, I'm missing an R. G-H-I-R-A. Oh, my goodness. Both glasses. GirardoCPA.com. Jerry, you've ever considered changing it to Jones?
Once upon a time, I considered changing it to Ghirardelli because the end, it's only the ending that's different.
Well, there you go.
And so we're Ghirardelli without the chocolate.
Ghirardelli without the chocolate, but he's still a sweet guy. Hey, I love it. Hey, we sure appreciate your time today. I'm only giving him a bad time because as a fellow Italian, I know what it's like to deal with those multiple consonant, multiple vowel last names. At any rate, Jerry Girardo, CPA, pastor of Lighthouse Christian Church in Novato. We sure appreciate all the time and the wonderful insights. And thank you so much for carving some time out of your busy schedule this time of year. Check them out online. And if you can't figure out how to spell his last name like me, give us a call here at the station. We'll make sure you get connected up.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.